MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Near the bottom of the hour, Spartan dogs Andre Hudson, Todd Duckett, and Tim Bogracus welcome in fellow dog Drew Neitzel.
I mean, what you put into something is what you're going to get out of it, and you just got to outwork your opponent, outwork the competition, and make incredible sacrifices. It may not seem worth it at the exact time that you're doing it, but trust me, if you put the time in, the effort, it'll pay off down the road.
Up first, here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU Ice Hockey Coach Tom Anastas.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Well, it's our pleasure to welcome MSU hockey coach Tom Anastas. You have a deep commitment to Michigan State. We're so proud that you're our hockey coach. And now we're facing a transition into Big Ten hockey. So as you're thinking about this first season, what goes through your mind?
Oh, there's lots. My mind's racing, frankly. It's really exciting. It's coming from the background that I do, having been at one time worked for a conference. I understand the different levels of resources that can be brought to the table for something, and the few meetings that I have sat in with the Big Ten, it's been so impressive of just the approach and the business-like approach and the resources. And I think one of the real comforting things that I saw that was so challenging for me when I was a commissioner was balancing the membership that we had from Lake Superior State University and the resources they had compared to the Big Ten universities and what we have. And that was always a challenge. What was nice going into meetings where people were essentially on the same page all the time. And so we're really excited about it. It's going to be an incredible challenge. Certainly, I think the six schools who are playing hockey will all be highly competitive. It's highly competitive in the recruiting market, and so that's what inspires us too is the challenge of being great in the new Big Ten. So it can't come soon enough.
With a lot of the challenges, Big Ten membership has expanded. Every sport has scheduling issues that we're working through, both on conference and non-conference scheduling. As we look in the future with the Big Ten, talk a little bit about your philosophy as a coach on what you see coming into Munn Ice Arena, what kind of games beyond the Big Ten opponents, and some of the other maybe exciting things down the line as far as scheduling that you hope to bring to Michigan State.
Well, we sat down and put together a very specific philosophy. And part of it was to embrace what's being done here at Michigan State and other sports and celebrating the state. And certainly now that we're no longer involved in the CCHA and that conference no longer exists, we do want to maintain, for two reasons, some of those rivalries within the state of Michigan and the CCHA, and two, it makes economic sense to do so. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we want to create a national flavor. We have alums across the country, and so where there's opportunity to get in markets and play in front of, some of our alums against good quality opponents, we want to make sure we do that too. So the challenge for us is going from a conference schedule that had 28 league games down to a conference schedule with 20. So we have a lot more non-conference games to schedule, and we really tried to create a plan to do that as economically responsible as possible. And we've been able to figure that out so far. So I think what our fans can look forward to is seeing teams from throughout the country, all five conferences, major Division I hockey powers and programs that play Division I in all sports. And for our student athletes, I think it's important to have broad-based experiences too. So we want to schedule the Ivies. We want to get them to Ivy campuses. We want to go into markets that maybe play neutral site games in NHL venues We want to stay in Detroit and have a presence. We want to play outdoor games when they make sense. So all of the above are things that we're focused on scheduling-wise.
I recently met with AP editors down in Detroit and was posted up on a question. We have an opportunity this year to play at Comerica as part of the NHL Winter Classic, and looking forward to playing down there. I think there's six NHL games outside this year. Too many?
Too many for my taste, definitely. I'm not sure what their strategy is. I think too much of a good thing oftentimes loses that uniqueness. And so I can't quite figure out their strategy, and I haven't spoken to somebody at that level to know what it is. But, it's had a very nice mystique from when it all started. All eyes were on Michigan State in 2001, mm-hmm. October 2001, we forget, yeah. When that happened. And, you know, I'm sure many people were holding their breath waiting for something to fail.
Including Mark.
Yeah, I'm sure. And yet it hit, a grand slam. And since that time, now everybody wants to be part of it. And I just think too much of a good thing. I look at it. And maybe I'm mistaken here, and I don't understand the bowl system, but mm-hmm. I remember the day when there was a lot less bowls, and in many cases it was way more meaningful, for some to get to a bowl, and today there's so many bowls. So I don't know. I hope they don't take away the uniqueness by overdoing it.
Yeah.
Stanley Cup playoffs, and Torrey Krug sort of comes onto the scene, and almost every time he's up and down the ice, they mention Michigan State, good or bad.
Oh, it was great. Not good or bad. It was great. It was phenomenal. And, he's one of those kids that he's a special kid. He's humble. He's confident. He's such a great representation of Michigan State. And, Michigan State had brought a lot to him, and he always gives us credit for that. But he brought a lot to Michigan State, and he's bringing a lot more. So it was a great marriage here. He's going to go out, and it was such a awesome experience for him. And communicating with him during that process, because, the one point I tried to remind him was it happened so fast for him, where now second round he's called up, and he makes this huge splash. Now he's a cult hero in New England. Mm-hmm. And now their team is on the rise and gets to the Stanley Cup Finals. And I reminded him not to forget to try, as hard as it is, to absorb the experience as much as he can, too, and enjoy the experience as much as he can, because you can sometimes take it for granted. You get there your first year, and that you're likely to get there again. And he had good perspective on that, even. He played with a player, Jaromir Jagr, who had got there with the Bruins and hadn't been there in 21 seasons. Hmm. And most guys don't play anywhere near 21 seasons. So it was just terrific for Torrey Krug, and certainly terrific for Michigan State.
It was sort of remarkable. So I was wondering if you had some in with the announcers, because it seemed like he was the only person that they kept mentioning their university experience.
Doc Emmerich is actually, I kind of give him credit for getting me in this business. He was the announcer for the Port Huron Flags, and he and my dad were best friends growing up in Port Huron, Michigan. And I used to sit on the steps as an elementary student listening to him call hockey games in Port Huron. So he's, Tom and I were fortunate to be part of or be present for his Hall of Fame induction mm-hmm. down in Chicago in the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's a very big Spartan fan. He attends a lot of games here and has called a few games here in mm-hmm. East Lansing. So he's a great, great person.
And one of the things we did have an opportunity, the NHL had that extended lockout through the first half of their season. And so many of those guys, Doc Emmerich included, were doing college games during the front half of the season. So I don't want to say we have an in per se, although right. there are very strong relationships yeah. there, which certainly helps us bring that to light.
Me texting him in the middle of all the games probably helped a little.
I'm sure that helped too, yeah.
Right. Remember, in the last 10 minutes, you haven't mentioned right. where he was from. But it was interesting. But there are many other Spartans who had an opportunity to participate in the playoffs. As you think about the coverage, the exposure of the college hockey Frozen Four, does that have a lot of cachet now in terms of the way it's covered, the changes have happened?
It's growing in cachet. I think our sport at the college level emulates the NHL level in respect to how that's related to the pro sport landscape. We're still a regional sport. We do have some national coverage. What has really helped college hockey in its television exposure in recent times is the evolution of a lot of these sports networks. So when CSTV came out initially and now is what we know as CBS Sports Network, NBC Sports Network now came off of, I can't remember what
Versus.
That was called. Versus, yeah. Mm-hmm. So now all those places are looking for content, and college hockey seemed to be some pretty decent content that they had interest in, and I know the Big Ten Network is interested in doing a lot more. So I think the cachet should continue to grow, and I think with the Big Ten platform, there will be even a greater focus. It'd be great for our sport if there was ever the day where we could see more BCS-type schools offer the sport. I don't see that anywhere in the near future, but if that ever happened, it would help grow that footprint. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between MSU hockey coach Tom Anastas, Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis, and Michigan State University president Luana K. Simon.
You compete with junior hockey for players who see that as a legitimate career path.
Mm-hmm.
And so that forces you to recruit players at an earlier age. Talk a bit about that.
It's a necessary evil, it seems to me. And I remember when I was commissioner and Jeff Jackson, who was coaching at the U.S. national team program, and then he left there and was coaching in pro hockey, wanted to come back to college. Notre Dame hired him, and he said, geez, the recruiting's really gotten young. Why is this, time? And we discussed it, and he said, I want to kind of stay away from it. And then shortly thereafter, he found out he really couldn't. If he wanted to try to attract the best of the best, that's just, it's necessary. And you're kind of rolling the dice a little bit, much like a professional draft system is. You're projecting people out at a very young age, most of which haven't even physically matured yet. And so we're trying to find the right balance, because one of the challenges in college hockey, and you mentioned Canadian junior hockey in particular, contrary to the other sports here on our campus, most kids come in right after high school, so they're coming in as 18-year-olds. When I came to Michigan State in 1981, five of the six kids in our class were 18 years old, and I graduated when I was 21. Today, the average age of an incoming freshman in college hockey throughout the country is over 20 years old. So there aren't many 18-year-olds who are physically mature enough yet to even come in. So you have to get the special ones who are ready for that. And then there's going to be a blend of some older kids who are playing American, you know, or Tier 2 Canadian junior hockey, who retain their eligibility to come into the system. So I think we'll continue to focus on young kids and have a blend of young prospects along with, you know, your traditional age prospects. And out of that pool, you know, we'll find the right balance to make our team as good as possible.
We have a lot of connections with the NCAA as far as, you know, President Simon, of course, on the leadership executive committee. Your new role with the rules committee with the NCAA, how's that experience been? And anything you want to share there?
What I like about it is, people are very committed to the sport. They're very into the sport. As you guys know in your experiences, people really dive in and give a wonderful effort on behalf of what their work is. And you have a lot of impact on the product in this case. This is actually impacting the product that we see on the ice. I think people oftentimes, when they look at big organizations that are structured like this, I hear the same types of criticisms with, like, USA Hockey as an example. I'm sure there's another national governing bodies who deal with it. It's an easy out to be critical, but I think there's a heck of a lot of good work that goes on within the structure. And I think one of the challenges of any organization is to constantly reassess it and see where it's at and see how you can, you know, avoid bureaucracy and keep things as nimble as you possibly can. But the organization, I don't know, I thought I read the other day, you know, it's almost a billion-dollar company. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a small organization anymore, and it's trying to serve a lot of purposes. So I think as long as any big organization like this exists, it's an easy way for people to criticize. It's just easy to say it's their fault when really they are we,
right?
Or is us.
Yeah.
As you go through some of those examples, we had, on the amateurism cabinet, we had an opportunity to bring in Tom with hockey. We had Brad Stevens and Roy Williams came in from basketball. We had football represented. Dave Kylitz came down for baseball. And then we brought in some of the more respected agents from each of those different sports. And it was remarkable. You know, you think of everybody being one. It was remarkable to hear all the differences mm-hmm. in how kids are recruited, how the process from college to the pros are very different depending upon the sport and the policies that exist between the professional sports and the NCAA relative to when kids are eligible for drafts. You know, baseball and hockey, they're eligible before they arrive here.
Right.
And it's a non-opt-in. They're drafted whether they want to be drafted or not.
Correct.
So it's, you know, there's a lot of variances, and that's a challenge for an organization as large as ours with as many different, you know, soccer has other challenges with the draft process.
And you know from your role now on the Rules Committee and also as a commissioner, there's a real tendency when a problem arises to create a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because that rule will solve the problem. But very rarely does that rule get viewed in the context of all the other rules we have, and we don't have a rule that we have a process that says if you create three rules, you got to get rid of at least two of the ones you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so over time, hockey being an example, the things have gotten more, mm-hmm. the rule book has gotten more and more cumbersome. And therefore harder to administer in particular ways. So the rules of play, whether there's a green line now or you know, or how big the rink is or all those, have been pretty easy to resolve because if you make one decision that says that the rink is this big, it is this big.
Right.
You don't keep the other rules in place
right.
that permit the rink to be a different size or to have three officials and, oh, by the way, we're going to keep the rule in that has two. And so in many ways, the way the games are played is a good example about what we need to do with rules in general, mm-hmm. which is to get rid of some when we make a change in a rule about the nature of play.
It's interesting you say that because I had an opportunity to meet with some of the folks at the NCAA, and I asked them that very thing, if there was any talk in restructuring, because
yeah.
it seems like the way rules committees are structured, it's working.
Right.
And so can't we duplicate that in some manner and create some efficiencies? And I'm not sure what that solution is, but can't we create a similar model for legislative-type rules and hopefully have similar amount of success? I don't know.
So tell us about you inherited a hockey program, much storied. You were a player that was part of a very successful hockey program. And you sort of came in at a time when most of the writers would have described the talent level of the program and its performance to be subpar.
That describes the circumstances. I guess I really look at it even more so now than back in March of 2011 when I started here. The irony of the similarities of me coming into the role now as I did as a student athlete when I picked Michigan State. Because at that time, I had a lot of opportunities to go pretty much anywhere in the country I wanted to go to. And I didn't know much about Michigan State at that time. I grew up in Metro Detroit and probably had more exposure to Michigan football at that time. And that was the extent of my knowledge. Neither of my parents went to college. And so I was going to be the first in my family to even attend college. And so I picked Michigan State because I just had, there was a feel on this campus when I visited. I believed in the vision of the coaches. And, the team had finished in last place the year before I came. The year I came, we came in with a really good class. And we made the NCAA tournament that year, and boom. You know, mm-hmm. the program really had a terrific run for, I don't know, 25 years or more. And the building was half full. I saw it as a student athlete at that time grow into a point during my course of time where you couldn't get a ticket. Kids were camping out. We had Friday night's student season tickets, Saturday night's student season tickets. There were no banners hanging in Mon Arena, no club seats, no suites, none of that. The lines were blue. And this year went even another step, because in Ron Mason's second season, the team finished in last place. I have a hard time even saying that, but and that's where we finished. And they had a freshman goaltender named Ron Scott, who was the team MVP. And we had a freshman goaltender named Jake Hildebrandt this year, who was named MVP. You know, and so the irony and the similarities continue. And now we have to just keep that continuing as we're trying to upgrade our recruiting. Recruiting is way different today than in 1980. We are recruiting a lot younger, which now makes your time frame longer in that regard. We saw attendance grow a fair bit last year, and we want to get that where you can't get a ticket in there very easily. And our student section has really done an incredible job of helping bring energy to the building, and I think
staying power throughout the game.
Yeah, and let's not kid ourselves. Our team were offensively challenged last year and the year before, so we struggled to score goals, and that's something that brings energy to the game. And we haven't been able to score much, and so they have brought a lot of energy to that building, a lot of energy to our team. And I think you'll see our team take another step this year, and then a bigger step next year. So I think we're headed where we want to be.
Well, we're so fortunate to have you at the helm of this program, and great things are coming, not only for hockey but for Michigan State as a whole, because you're on this campus.
Thank you.
No question. What advice do you have now, again, for parents with children who are boys and girls who are really interested in hockey?
Well, I keep telling my kids to find their passion. Find your passion, and I think when you find your passion, you make yourself an enormous asset to whoever you're going to be around. And whether it's an employer or a spouse or whatever it might be, and be totally committed to that, and then you'll enjoy every day. And I feel like I've never, even though you have highs and lows in your job, I don't feel like I've ever worked a day in my life. And I've never regretted when my feet hit the floor going to do what I do, and I feel pretty fortunate about that. So I talk to my kids about that all the time, and even friends of mine who ask for similar advice, whether it's in sports or whatever. And in my household, having five very different kids that are under the same rule, so to speak, but you know, I have kids interested in college here and education. I have one going to medical school. I have others finding the way. I just had a daughter. She's an assistant coach in basketball now at Northwood University, where she played, so she's going down the coaching ranks. But to me, I love being around people who are passionate about what they do. So if people can find that, and in my household, I was always concerned that my whole life was surrounded by hockey, that my kids were going to feel like they had to be compelled to be around it, and I kind of pushed back on that and said, that was my path, you find yours. And some of them have done the hockey thing and are really enjoying it, and some of them are following different paths. And so that would be the advice I'd give to people if they want to, you know, pursue their interest in hockey or any other sport or any academic area that they have an interest with, is follow your passion.
A good way to close. Thanks for being a part of Michigan State.
Thanks for having me.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was MSU Spartans ice hockey coach Tom Anastas talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, the Spartan Dogs with Drew Neitzel.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, We're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Thank you, Shannon. Here are Spartan Dog podcast hosts Andre Hudson, Todd Duckett, and Tim Bogracus with former Spartan basketball player Drew Neitzel.
Spartan Dog podcast is brought to you by Simple Tee Printing. We make shirts, we give back. Making printing shirts simple. Check them out today at simple-t.org. Conquest Health and Fitness. Reshape, rebuild, and renew your life. Go check them out at their website, conquesthealthandfitness.com. And Evergreen Car Wash and Detail. Ride like a champion today. Give them a call at 517-574-1598. They'll come to your house, your work, your place of business, worship, wherever. They'll pick your car up and they'll have you riding right. All right, we're back. Another edition Spartan Dog podcast. Tim Bogracus.
Todd Duckett.
Andre Hudson.
And we're joined today by quite possibly the only ambidextrous player to ever grace Michigan State basketball court. It is legendary for brushing his teeth growing up with both hands. Drew Neitzel joins us today.
All right, Drew. Welcome, man. What's up?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Drew, how was that intro?
It was all right, man. You're always giving me crap about brushing my teeth with both hands. But
I think it's a noble thing
that you're
doing.
It paid off, man. I think just because you couldn't dribble with either hand, you make fun of me for being able to use both hands. So.
You know, that's the wrong way to talk to your elders there, Drew. I appreciate that. Everything I've done for you in your life. And that hurts. All that golf we were supposed to play next week, consider yourself disinvited to that.
You're my big bro, you know that. So I gotta give you some crap once in a while, man.
I know. I'm used to it from you.
Well, Drew, we wanna just start out a little bit and kind of give a brief a little bit about you at Michigan State, and we're kind of curious of, out of all the great moments that you had playing, what's a moment that stands out the most to you that you remember?
I mean, there's a few that definitely stand out. Obviously, my freshman year, starting at point guard, and going to the Final Four as just a freshman, something I never dreamed of or thought would happen that early in my career. Just coming out of high school 1 year later and playing against the best players in the country in college basketball, it was quite a whirlwind. And when you go to a Final Four your first year, you kind of think that's what it's all about and that's going to happen every single season. And unfortunately, I never got back to another one. But to say that I did play in a Final Four and all that stuff, just the NCAA tournament experience was unbelievable. And then, later in my career, obviously, we knocked off number one, Wisconsin at home my junior year. So that was a great game. The Izzo rushed the floor and, just a moment that I'll never forget in my career.
Man, was Wisconsin number one? I don't even remember that.
Back in 2007. So they beat somebody and jumped to number one, and we knocked them off the very next game. So, it was a great game, a great team win. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, Drew, I got to say, you're probably my favorite player that I never played with after I graduated. So that puts you in the small category, but
yeah, man. After,
but you're still my favorite, man. You're my favorite.
You know,
in that
I
group.
Appreciate that. All your successes in your career at State and overseas. And professional basketball, that means a lot, man. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where I was headed with this. I just wanted you to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, your preparation, you know, from high school to college and now even in your professional career. Like, what are some of the key factors that have led you to the success you've had up until this point?
I think, overall, number one, by far, it was just, my work ethic. Something my dad instilled in me as a youngster, not only in basketball, but in the classroom, just in life in general. If you want something, you got to go after it, and you got to, make the sacrifices and put the time in and outwork everybody else, outwork the competition. I wasn't blessed with a ton of size and 6 foot and not the fastest or quickest guy out there, but, I took a lot of pride in working on my game and outworking everybody else growing up as a kid in high school and college and even professionally, in the off season, putting a lot of time in. So I think that was the biggest factor in my successes is just, my work ethic and the time I put into the game.
You're listening to Spartan Dog Podcast. Timbo Gracchus, Todd T.J. Duckett, Andre Hudson. We're joined today by Drew Neitzel. Drew, now you were coming out of high school, and there haven't been a ton of players that had the expectations like you had when you were coming to Michigan State. How hard was it for you to make that transition and to kind of keep your own ego at bay with everyone telling you how great of a player you are once you were graduating?
It was tough. I mean, coming out of high school my senior year, I won Mr. Basketball and, I could do anything I wanted out there and shoot whenever I wanted. And then, coming to Michigan State, it was, I was the low man on the totem pole. It was my job to pass first, pass second, pass third, and, then look to score. And, I had to understand that and learn that role and pay my dues a little bit, to the upperclassmen. And, I was okay with that. And, I came off the bench the first half of the season, and I started I filled in the starting rotation at the end of the year, so it all worked out pretty well. But it was a little adjustment, change, and having a different role than I had, all the way growing up of being one of the best players on the floor. I had to take a back seat. But it paid off, and that's why Coach Izzo is such a great coach, leading us to the Final Four that year.
Just from the different guests we've had on this show and even from us talking as a group, a lot of similarities are kind of thrown out there, especially what you said. You had to start from the bottom. You had to work your way up. And a lot of success stories, you hear that. You hear that same beginning. I had to start. I had to humble myself. I had to, you said you had to pass first, second, and third. And I think when a lot of people think about, look back on your career, a lot of the memories that people have is you scoring, you making plays. And they don't really, they tend to forget, when you first came in, you had to take a back seat and you really had to, look up to the upperclassmen, play your role, earn the respect from the players and the coaches. And, I think it's a great thing. I think that was great for your success. Now, as you're moving into your professional career, I'm sure you had to battle some of the same things playing overseas and trying to find your way in a different country and different coaches. Like, I've been over there, so I know how the experience can be, especially initially when you first go over there. There's not a lot of respect for young Americans. You really have to go out there and fight your way into that playing position. And I just wonder if you had some of those battles since playing, having your career overseas, have you had to deal with some of those battles, and how's that working out for you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like you said, you've had a great career over there. I know Timbo played for a while in Europe, so it's an adjustment. I mean, not only on the basketball side of things, it's a lot different game. It's more physical. It's a different style of play. The coaches coach a different way, almost opposite of what you learn, in the college game. So it's a little frustrating at first and, take some time to buy in and realize, what they're doing is correct. But, it's tough, outside of basketball, adapting to a different culture, living in a different country, different food, different language, living over there by yourself. It's a tough adjustment, but I mean, I think that made me a better person, a better man, going through those things, those hardships over there. But, you know, to play basketball and get paid to do it, it's definitely a blessing. So through all the tough times and all that, it's definitely worth it.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to Spartan Dogs Bogracus, Duckett, and Hudson with fellow dog Drew Neitzel.
I didn't have the opportunity, like both of these guys here and yourself, to play overseas.
You were too busy being a number one draft pick.
I was too busy playing here.
Exactly. I'll trade that any day,
TJ. But I'm real curious because you touched on how it having to adapt to the culture and having to learn something new. When I got drafted first in Atlanta, and I mean, we're only talking a 10-hour drive, but from there I felt the distance, I felt the new level that I was on, I felt training camp, I felt the distance. How did you overcome that? I mean, we're talking overseas, we're talking different time zones, we're talking all these things, and to be a young man going from a comfort level of a very successful career to overseas, having to fight, having to really grow up, like you say, and become a man. How was that transition for you? What did you do to either take your mind off of it, to refocus? What were some of the things that got you through during those times?
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. I spent a lot of time on the computer, Skyping with friends and family back home. You know, I had a few extra plane tickets written in my contract, so my parents got to come over and visit my first year in Germany. And, you know, I was blessed to have a couple of really good teammates. They had wives over there, so, you know, I became really close with them. And, you know, they'd invite me over for dinner, and we'd just hang out, kind of like a second family over there to me, without having, you know, my friends and things over there. So It was an adjustment at first. I played in a very small town my first season in Germany. I think about 7,000 or 8,000 people. It was just a little village, but in a way that was good because, you know, I didn't get lost too much. You know, it was kind of a family atmosphere in the city where everybody knew everybody, and it was a fairly easy adjustment considering everything.
Did you have some issues when you came back? Now you're adjusted. Now you understand their culture. Every time you come back, I don't even know, 2-3 months, I'm not sure how long you came back, but was there some struggle to re-get back into what's here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely when you're gone that long and, you know, you're living in a different culture, a different lifestyle, things are a lot slower over there in Europe. People just go at their own pace. There's no rush. I mean, it's definitely a different world. You know, I played in China for a little bit, and, you know, coming home from there, it was quite a bit different. But, I mean, I remember getting off the plane in America sometimes, and, you know, you'd see somebody and you go talk to them, or you'd buy some food or something. And I was still trying to speak German or French or, you know, whatever, when I ordered the food, and they look at me like I'm crazy because they speak English, you know, and just you're so used to trying to talk like that. That it took a little bit to get used to.
Yeah, I can attest to that. All that traveling back and forth, man, it can get kind of confusing at times.
But, yeah, exactly.
One thing I want to say that I really admire about you, because I was in that position, you are still pretty active in the state of Michigan. I see you in various events, community events, and giving back. And I know in my days of playing, you know, being over there 9-10 months, when I came back, you know, I just wanted to relax. I played a little golf and I spent time with the family, but I wasn't as active. And that was one of the main reasons when I stopped playing. I felt I needed to do more to give back to my community and just my surroundings. And so I want to commend you, first of all, for all the things you still are able to do. Even though you're out of the country for long periods of time, you still find the time to give back when you are back in the state of Michigan. And I think that's very good. And I just want to ask you, like, have you began to start preparing yourself for that next step, and what you know, what's kind of on your brain? I mean, I would assume that you've already been establishing some great relationships in Grand Rapids and in Lansing, and do you have Have you started that plan for the next phase in your life yet? I guess I would
say. Yeah, definitely. I mean, people, you know, every time I go to different camps in college and things like that, they always talk about, hey, you got to start thinking about what's next. You know, you never know when your career can end. You can have a bad injury. Your career can be over tomorrow. So it's always got to be in the back of your mind of what your interests are, what you're thinking about doing after playing ball. For me, it's, you know, there's some coaching interests. I got my degree in business, so I've been reaching out to people in that field and just trying to get some questions answered and figure out what ultimately I want to do after my playing days are done, because it's kind of a scary feeling, because all you've done your whole life is play ball every single day for, you know, 20 years, and then all of a sudden it's over. It's like, what do you do? So I've been starting to prepare for that time when it comes. And part of the reason I give back is, you know, Grand Rapids, Lansing, the Michigan State community has been so good to me, treated me so well, supported me so much throughout my career, both at Michigan State and, you know, overseas, that, you know, whatever I can do to give back, if I'm free, I'm in the area, you know, I'm willing to do it. So I enjoy being around and helping out different causes.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is, especially for you, realizing that we've all gone through that same transition of ending our careers, and it's been interesting that no matter who we talk to when we're doing these podcasts, everybody has the exact same feeling of the initial fear of, what am I supposed to do now that I'm not a basketball player, I'm not a football player. And I think that's the beauty of the network of former athletes that we're building, or we've built over the years, is that everybody, we've had so many doors open up of people who want to help out, because we've all been in the same position.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the Michigan State, I mean, especially the athletes, I mean, I know especially basketball, I mean, I've reached out to guys that played, you know, 20 years ago, and they're willing to help me if they're in a field that I'm interested in learning about or approaching a career. They're willing to help, and I'm sure it's the same way with football, you know, just a network of guys willing to give back to each other. And, you know, I look forward to someday, you know, 10 years from now, guys calling me saying, hey, I'm looking to get in your field of business, you know, can you help me out, you know, can I get some input? So I look forward to those days.
Drew, one thing that we've all talked about is the influence our coaches have had on us, not only in college but prior to our collegiate careers. Talk a little bit about the influence you've had of coaches on the west side of the state, and when you got to Michigan State with Coach Izzo, and the impact they've had on your life and your career.
Yeah, I mean, my dad had coached me, pretty much all the way up till high school. And then Coach Vanderclay at Wyoming Park High School had a great influence on me, you know, not only helping me with the recruiting process and, you know, all that stuff, but giving me a lot of freedom on the court. You know, without him, putting the ball in my hand, giving me the opportunity to be successful and score and make plays and all that, you know, I wouldn't have gotten the accolades that I did in high school and the exposure that I got. So I'm very grateful for the freedom that he gave me while I was there at Wyoming Park. And obviously Coach Izzo, I mean, he's, you know, a Hall of Fame coach, and, you know, taught me the work ethic, you know, the intensity, the passion you got to have to be successful. And the biggest thing he taught me, Coach Izzo, is, you know, how to communicate with people. You know, I came in as a freshman to Michigan State as a shy kid, you know, 160 pounds. And, you know, I was confident, but, you know, as far as communicating and talking and demanding things out of the upperclassmen, you know, I wasn't really comfortable doing that. So, he worked with me on that over my career, and felt like I became a pretty good leader by the end of my 4 years there at Michigan State. And I mean, that communication, that carries over and not only into basketball, but in life. You know, if you get into business or whatever it is, you got to be able to talk to people, different people from different demographics. You know, you just got to be able to relate with people. And I think you guys do a great job of that, in the social media stuff. You guys are doing the podcast. So, the communication part of life is very important. And that's something Coach Izzo definitely taught me. Mm.
You're listening to Spartan Dogs Podcast Radio with Tim, Andre, and Todd. And our special guest is Drew Neitzel. Drew, before you came to Michigan State, did you always want to go to Michigan State? Was it, or didn't care when you went to college?
To be honest, I really didn't have a favorite school. Uh-huh. You know, I liked whoever won the national championship, whether it was Duke, Arizona, Kansas, you know, North Carolina. Every year switched. You know, that was my favorite team, whoever was the best. So, you know, during the recruiting process to get letters, to have coaches calling from, you know, all those schools, it was pretty awesome. But it just worked out great that, you know, Michigan State in my backyard, an hour from home, you know, won the championship in 2000. And, you know, that's when they started recruiting me. I started coming up to football games, watching you catch that touchdown pass against Michigan in the end zone as time expired. You know, all that kind of stuff just made me want to be a Spartan and, you know, be a part of something special. So, you know, I committed to State after my sophomore year of high school because I knew that's where I wanted to be. And, you know, I was up there playing open gyms in the summertime and coming up to games all the time in the fall and the winter. So it just felt like home. And, you know, Timbo, he was like a big brother to me. He still is. You know, one of my mentors took me under his wing. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that.
It's a special place, Michigan State is, and they definitely treat us well. It's a beautiful campus, but I believe what makes it more special is guys like yourself who choose to come to school here, who, like all of us, give it everything we have, our blood, sweat, and tears for this place. And it's really great to hear what you have going on now and how you're doing, and to hear the stories that you've told. It's almost time for us to wrap this up here a little bit.
Yeah, Drew, what we like to do is we like to have our guests kind of leave the listeners with a little bit of wisdom that they've kind of gained through their sports career, life, whatever. You know, anything you want to get out that you think is important for people to hear, we like to give our guests a floor, and it is yours, my man. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, like I talked about with the communication part, you just got to learn how to deal with different people in life, you know, communicating with them in every aspect, whether it's in sports, being a leader, being a captain, in the business world, learning how to deal with coworkers, things like that. And the biggest thing I learned through sports, which is, it seems pretty simple and like a given, but, I mean, what you put into something is what you're going to get out of it. And, you know, I was blessed to have a dad that pushed me really hard and, you know, taught me the you know, that hard work will pay off. And I put in a ton of time, more than, you know, anybody will ever know. And, you know, just like you guys put a ton of time to get where you're at and be successful. So, you know, to people listening, if there's young kids listening to the podcast here, I mean, you just got to outwork your opponent, outwork the competition, and make incredible sacrifices. It may not seem worth it at the exact time that you're doing it, but trust me, if you put the time in, the effort, it'll pay off down the road.
Young kids and adults can understand that one.
Yeah.
Drew, thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Well, that wraps up another Spartan Dog podcast. If you get a chance, check us out on Facebook, Spartan Dogs Podcast. Like us. You'll have all our content up there. Pictures. Leave us questions. Send us, you know, feedback. Go down to iTunes. Search Spartan Podcast, all one word. Get us on your phone. Take us with you on the road. We'll make your day better. Spartan Dog Podcast, we're out.
Rubbing the light.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was former MSU Spartans basketball player Drew Neitzel talking with Spartan Dogs Tim Bogracus, Todd T.J. Duckett, and Andre Hudson. To hear their chat again or to hear any of the Spartan Dog podcasts, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
The program is MSU Today. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with some observations from the Spartan life. We love our comfort zones. Even an uncomfortable status quo is preferable to the unknown. But things change. We outgrow a job, or the job outgrows us. Our relationship ends. A health crisis appears. or the sting of an unhappy current reality becomes so great that we are forced to step outside of our self-imposed boundaries. This is one of life's great ironies. We often fight to stay inside the box when the very thing we need to fuel our future lies on the outside. This week, make a list of the things that are keeping you inside your comfort zone. How many of them are self-imposed? Every single one. The next chapter of your life's adventure will be written with or without your direct involvement. Maybe it's time to imagine what that chapter might be if your uncomfortable comfort zone didn't exist. As I was researching this week's message, I discovered this anonymous poem, which I've customized just for you. I hope it gets you thinking about those self-imposed limitations and the opportunities that lie beyond them. I used to have a comfort zone where I knew I wouldn't fail. The same four walls and busy work were really more like jail. I longed so much to do the things I'd never done before, but stayed inside my comfort zone and paced the same old floor. I didn't want to build the traits successful people share. I watched my friends advance and thrive, pretending not to care. I claimed to be so busy with the things inside the zone, but deep inside, I longed for something special of my own. I couldn't let my life go by just watching others grow. I held my breath, I stepped outside, and let the changes flow. I took a step, and with new strength I'd never felt before, I kissed my comfort zone goodbye and closed and locked the door. If you're in a comfort zone, afraid to venture out, remember that our heroes were at one time filled with doubt. A step or two and words of praise can make your dreams come true. Reach for your future with a smile. Happiness is there for you. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans A.D. Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.